At bestvolleyballvideos.com, we have over 150 hours of training videos developed specifically for the youth and high school age volleyball player. Please go to bestvolleyballvideos.com. Hello, everybody. This is the third podcast in a four-podcast series titled The Purpose of Practice. And in the world of competitive sports, if there was no competition, there would be no need for practice. In fact, the only reason teams practice is to prepare for competition. In the first podcast of this series, we discuss the acquisition of skill for young players and the benefits of rote repetitive training that lay a foundation to be able to repeat basic volleyball skills. In the second podcast, we covered small group situational training that created game situations that could be performed in a much more efficient manner than just playing 6-on-6 over and over again. In both of those podcasts, we focused almost entirely on maximizing the development of each player to ensure that a team could play at the highest level by having players who had the fewest possible weaknesses. For this podcast, I want to talk about taking a group of players and turning them into a cohesive unit based on maximizing the strengths and minimizing the weaknesses of each player within that unit. As players become more skilled and teams strive to play at an elite level, the time spent on team development and preparation is going to increase, and the time spent on individual player development is going to decrease. Let's take a look at that process. One of the first things we want to look at is what training action needs to be done as a team. In other words, when all six players are on the court together working as a single unit. I think this is one of the things that coaches need to try to understand as they can be the most efficient with their preparation, with their training. You constantly hear coaches saying that serve and pass are the two most important skills, which are true. Ironically, those are two skills that are most often trained in an individual manner rather than in a pure team setting. Most coaches will have their primary passers working together on one court, while the setters, middles, and non-passers are working on other skills, oftentimes on a separate court at the same time. While the skills of serve and pass are absolutely crucial to team success, they are largely individual skills that must be mastered by certain individuals so the team can be successful. Not unlike the pitcher in baseball who must throw strikes and has no control over the fielding or batting of his teammates. In reality, almost every practice of every elite team in the world will have a combination of rote repetitive training, such as passing reps, defensive reps, setting reps, blocking footworks reps. You'll also see a lot of small group training to reinforce maximizing execution in many of the areas that we have discussed in past podcasts. Finally, most training sessions will end with some type of team or system work where the entire team is working together. That's what this podcast is going to dive into. I want to take a couple seconds to talk about chunking. And I've talked about chunking in other podcasts. And if you've been to any of my coaches' clinics, you'll know that it's laid out in the first part of the coaching school manual as well. And the word chunking comes from psychology, and I think it literally refers to a method of stringing small pieces of information together to accomplish a much bigger task for memory retention. I heard somebody say one time, imagine that you've got to learn a 9-digit number, and the best way to learn it would be to learn 3 digits at a time, repeat those 3 digits over and over again, and then you can string those three-digit numbers together, and you easily remember the 9 numbers. So I think for volleyball, it just simply means taking a more complicated task, such as playing a volleyball game, and isolating and concentrating on certain parts of that game, such as your side-out offense, or specific rotations within your offense, or your block and defense versus specific attack situations, all kinds of situations. And all these are examples of taking pieces or chunks of the entire piece, which is playing a volleyball match, and working to perfect and master those pieces basically one chunk at a time. So when you constantly hear me talking about training situations, this is exactly what I'm referring to. I think when developing training systems, you're going to notice that I'm a big believer in this type of training. And I think if you go around the world and watch all the best coaches train and all the best teams train, you're going to see almost every practice looks something like this in similar manner. So I think you'll see a lot of that. So we'll talk a lot about this in this as well. So I want to look in this podcast, we're going to look at two primary components of team play. The first one is what we call side-out offense, which, you know, the term side-out offense comes from in the old school days when you could only score with your serve. You had to receive another team's serve. You had to side out successfully before you could get the ball back to serve and try to score a point. So side out, I think most people know what side out offense is, when your team is receiving serve. And the second component is when your team is serving. And so I'm going to cover those two components within this podcast. And I'm going to talk at the very end just about, you know, a few of the drills that I really like to put these two components together. But the first thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about side out offense. And I've got 12 things I want coaches to think about. And I'm going to go through all 12 of them. And as I talk in this podcast, the things that I talk about will give you an idea or give you concepts of how to put your training together, because these things are the most important parts of these components. So clearly you want to train the most important parts as thoroughly as possible so you have no weaknesses when your team plays. So regarding your side out offense, one of the things first is your passers. Who are they? When will they pass? Will they pass in all six rotations? Will they pass in various rotations? And where will they pass out? That's going to be one of the things that you're going to have to identify as a coach. The next thing is your setters. Do you have one setter? Do you have two setters? Do you run a 5-1 traditional? Do you run a traditional 6-2? Do you run maybe a 4-2? Do you run some kind of modified version of any one of these systems? You know, so identifying who your setters are. Attackers, who, when, and where. Who are your attackers? When will they most likely attack? Where will they attack from? You know, that's the third component here, the third option here. Number four is talking about rotation analysis. And you're looking at your best matchups. And one of the things that you want to make sure is that your rotations are set up so you understand that you've got six rotations and that you want each rotation to maximize its strength and try to minimize its weakness. So as you put a team together, as you put a group of players together into a team, how will those rotations best ideally fit through, you know, each rotation is 1/6 of the total team. And so how do you put those six pieces together one rotation at a time? And I think one of the things that's got to be important also is if you're receiving serve, you know, do your team and do your players, especially your setter, understand the concepts of spread and overload? And spread simply means that you want to hit at the pins as much as possible to force the other team's blockers to move as much as possible. If you have a three-hitter offense or you're using back row attack, overload means that you put more than one hitter, you put two hitters in one area of the court, which overloads an area, which forces and stresses the block in that area. And then you isolate another area of the court. You know, let's say you run two hitters behind, then you've isolated your left side on the outside. Or let's say you run your quick hitter away from the setter. We call it a B. You might call it a 31. And so you've got a left side and a 31. And so you've isolated the right side. But that's an overload. And one of the things that you want to make sure is that you try to incorporate the spread concepts and the overload concepts, because over time, those two concepts are going to be the most successful offensively. They're going to allow your side-out offense to produce at the highest level. So understanding those as a coach and making sure that your team, especially your setter, understands those and they're incorporated into your training are going to be really important. I think that's one of the keys. Another thing is to think about is does your offense incorporate a back row attack after the serve has been passed? Some people use back row attack in transition. They don't use it a lot in side out. So you want to make sure that if you're going to use in side out, that it's part of the side out offense, is part of, you know, the tactics that you use. And if so, you know, what position does that back row attack come from? Does it come from the middle back? Does it come from the right back? Does it come from the left back? That's another thing you're going to want to incorporate as you set up your side out offense. And I think one of the things also is your setters need to understand your attack and also your opponent's block matchup. So your setters need to understand when you're receiving serve, where are the weakest perceived points for the opponent's block? I mean, is there a small setter on the other side of the net from you that you have a great matchup with your left side hitter? Or is there a smaller middle against maybe a taller middle you have? But one of the key things is these are all things that need to be perceived, you know, by your setter and understood by your setter. I think that's one of the things that's going to be key. And Number eight is set distribution. And you're going to have, not only for players, but also probably by rotations, you're going to have priorities on who should get set the most, who should get the second most number of sets, who should probably be set the least. You're going to have those. And so set distribution really comes, the set distribution ratios really come after, you know, you have some data, and numbers really never lie. So if you have stats or you've been charting in practice, you know the players that hit best from what positions. You know each rotation, the player that you might want to set first, you might want to set last. You know, once you have data, they become trend lines, and then you have an idea of the percentages that you're going to have the chance to be successful. And so set distribution is going to be really important for you and also for your setter to understand. Number nine is first ball kill is king. And, you know, because if you, you know, other teams can't score if the ball's on the floor. And so I think that's one of the things that you're going to spend a lot of time in practice on, is trying to get first ball kills when you receive serve. You really don't want to rally. You want to put the ball on the floor. So pass set kill is much preferred over pass set hit. And I think that's one of the things you want to look at as well. And I think also that you as a coach and also the players on the floor need to understand that your first contact abilities or your passing abilities are going to dictate your offensive options. And, you know, there's a saying that you never attempt tactically what you cannot consistently execute technically. And that is unbelievably true for side-out offense especially. And if you look at your side-out offense, you're going to have six rotations, which means you have six mini games that you have to win. And so one of the things, as you sit down and look at all six rotations, you want to give yourself the best chance to win in each one of those six rotations. So it's putting the best passers in the best positions to pass. It's putting the players, the attackers, in the best position to attack in each one of those rotations. So that's one of the key things that you'll have to think about as a coach, is how you strengthen and make each rotation as strong as possible. And another thing to think about is block coverage. I mean, once you've passed the ball, once you've set the ball, once you've swung at the ball, you know, does your team excel in block coverage? So that's one of the key things I think that's really important. I mean, and when we travel to Japan or we would travel to Asia to play, I mean, the Asians were so good at block coverage. So we would always block a lot of balls, but they would always cover and just keep swinging. So one of the things you're going to want to make sure is that your team not only excels in pass, set, hit, but you have to expect the ball to be blocked. And also, once the ball is blocked, can you control the ball, reorganize your attack, and get a good swing again so you can try to get a kill on that second attempt? So I think that's one of the things you want to look at also. So those are things to think about on your team. Really, things that you want to think about, those are things that need to be controlled and understood before you start playing. All of those will play into how you train your side-out offense. And so things that I would suggest are really important, and I'm going to go down here, down the line on this stuff, is work on the three contact execution. And when you're training side-out offense, or when you're working on rotations, one of the things that you can do as a coach is you can go out and say, we're going to play a game. But it's going to be, what's going to happen is you're going to get very, very limited number of quality reps, because there's so much that goes into playing just 6-on-6. So one of the things that I would suggest as a coach, and I did this forever, is to work on three contact execution of your side out, which means work on pass set attack, and just, you can use an open net. You don't have to have a team on the other side of the net right now, but just work on the three contact execution until the ball crosses the net. And then that gives you a chance to work repetitively on your execution, which I call timing and tempo, and let that be how you're going to build your six rotations of your side-out offense, especially in the beginning. So each player becomes comfortable in their role. The more times a player can execute the required skill within the team dynamic, the better they are with the timing and tempo side of that, which I think is really important. And I'll never forget when I was in Japan in 1992, you know, I was at a club called Daiei, and Ari Selinger was the coach of the Daiei women's team, but he was also coaching the Dutch men, which would go on, they would go on to play in the Olympic final that year in Barcelona in 1992. And he had the Dutch men there training. And I think almost every day I watched them, they had a session of about 30 minutes where they would just pass, set, hit, and rotate. It seemed like they probably got, you know, 100, went through 100 rotations. Somebody would just serve to them, serve about 50, 60, 70% so they could work on timing. But they were working on their passing setting and their hitting. They weren't playing it out. Just the first team and second team were just pass, set, hit. And, you know, it became a point where, especially for young teams and young players, the idea of pass, set, hit and the execution of all the skills, you get so much more work in this environment than you do if you're in a 6-on-6 game situation where you're not getting nearly the opportunities to sight out. So when you're starting to implement your sight out game, I would suggest this three contacts, pass, set, hit, and when the ball crosses the net, go back and do it again, go back and do it again. Don't worry about having to play it out. Don't worry about any of those things, and I'll get into the why and hows a little bit more later. But I think that's one of the things that's key about, and I think here are some examples of what I would call side-out progression training. And these can be done with a single team. They don't have to be done with a team on the other side of the net. And I think when you're working on timing and tempo, as I just mentioned, have the servers put the serve in play at about 70%. You want to be able to practice executing your skills. Your setters want to be able to work on the timing with their hitters. And if the servers are back there making lots of serving errors, and one of the things I would suggest is just have your server stand at the end of the court, serve at about 70%, put the ball in play, and let you work on your execution of your side-out offense. And this is really no different than the baseball player, you know, hitting off the hitting machine in baseball, or taking batting practice, or the basketball player going out and working on shot selection without somebody in their face guarding them. I mean, you want to work on repetitive execution over and over again. And so here's some of the things that I would suggest that you do within your side out offense. And the first one is, I'm going to talk about clean kills. Clean kills is when you pass, set, and the hitter goes up, gets a good swing, puts the ball on the floor. I call that a good kill, okay? And so one of the things that you can look at is you can look at, let's say, let's get 5 clean kills per rotation, and then we're going to rotate in multiples of 6. We're going to go 6 or 12 or 18, but we're going to stay in that rotation. We're going to get 5 clean kills, and then we're going to rotate. And this is one of the best ways to start training your side-out offense. And secondly, one of the things you can do is you can say each potential attacker, let's say you're in a 3-hitter offense, each attacker has to get a clean kill, then you can rotate. And again, work in multiples of 6. Another thing you can do is you can combine a perfect pass or a 3-point pass and get a clean kill. So we need a good pass and we need a clean kill, then we're going to rotate. If it's a bad pass but a clean kill, we're going to take our swing, but we're not going to rotate until we get a perfect pass and a clean kill, and then we'll rotate. And again, we're going to work in multiples of 6 as well. And another thing we can do is, to make it more difficult, is you can say, let's combine a perfect pass and a quick attack kill or a middle kill, and then we'll rotate that way. And I think these are all things that you do to continually progress what I would call the level of difficulty. Another thing you can do is you can put a time limit on the drill. You can shoot for a certain number of clean kills in a specific period, again, in multiples of 6. But that forces your passers to be dialed in. You don't have a lot of time to make mistakes. And so, again, there's a little bit more pressure put on it as well. And we used to run a drill called 60 Perfect, and we would take a certain amount of time. We would have a server serving, again, about 70%, and we had to get 60 quick attack kills in a certain period of time. I think it was like maybe 20 minutes. So we needed 3 quick attack kills basically average every minute. So the passers had to be dialed in. The middles had to be dialed in with the setters. But we call this 60 perfect drill. Okay, I think that was one of the things. So these drills, which work on repetition, timing, and tempo, all give you the ability to start laying the foundation to work on your side-out offense. And I think from there, one of the things that I would do is I would add a couple coverage balls. So pass, set, hit, have a coach put a cover ball in, have to hit again, and now you got to get a clean kill. You might put 2 cover balls in, so you've got to get a swing on serve receive, get a kill, coach puts a coverage ball in right away, you got to get another kill, and maybe 2 coverage balls. You got to get 3 clean kills in a row, then you rotate. So now you're starting to ratchet up the difficulty, but you're going to work on rotate. Let's say rotation 1, jump up, take a swing, put the ball down, ball comes in right away from a coach to cover, have to get another good clean kill. If you tape the ball or don't get a good clean kill, then you got to go back and start over again. And again, 1 to 2 coverage balls, because that means the coverage has to come up, play the ball, hitters have to get back in transition, swing again. And one of the things you can also do in coverage is you can set the scenario where the person that gets the first kill on serve receive, they cannot hit the covered ball. Somebody else has to hit the covered ball, either a middle or the right side. If the left side hit the first ball, you've got to add those coverage balls in, and they have to be hit by different hitters. So that's another thing you can put into it. Another thing you can do is say, we need 2, 3, 4 clean kills in a row to rotate. If I don't get 2 or 3 or 4 in a row, I've got to start over. That puts more pressure on each rotation, what will happen is you will spend more time always working on your weak rotations than you do on your strong rotations, so you can balance out your offense. So generally, you'll see this struggle in practice, but consecutive clean kills in a row and then or start over, that's another way to work on rotations. Also, you can use, we have these devices called blockets. You've probably seen their barriers you put up. People stand on boxes. The hitters hit into them to work on coverage. You can go up and say, we're going to hit off these blockets. We're going to have to tool out of bounds on serve receive. So now you're working on serve receive to attack. Plus, you're asking your left side or right side attacker, they have to hit off the block for a clean kill. You can look at a certain number of those again before you rotate. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to lead your team through developing their rotations by continually increasing the level of difficulty and also giving them things they can do. Another thing you can do is you can put another team across the net. And let's say you've got a high school team or a club team where your team that's on your side of the net is the strongest team. There's not another team that's going to beat your team. Then maybe what you do is you create a level of difficulty such as you add 7 players to the other team. You put 4 blockers at the net, or you put 4 defenders in the back row, and now you have to get a first ball kill on sight out before you can rotate, or you have to get a certain number of first ball kills before you rotate against 4 blockers or 4 back row defenders plus 3 blockers. So again, we're always, and again, you've heard me in past podcasts, we're always looking for things that create a greater challenge. We want to stress and we want to struggle as much as possible. So another thing you can do is you can say, let's add a bonus point scoring for another team across the net. So maybe first ball kill is 2 points, or quick attack kill is 2 points, or back row kill is 2 points. That could be something you could add as well on your side out, and then you can rotate if you're keeping score. So that's another thing you can look at on your side out. And other things you can do when you're playing against another team, and I'm going to talk about bonus scoring as well, is I like a drill called 3 out of 5. And one of the things that you look at in the side out world is you want to side out at a certain level. You know what your team needs to side out at. So in this drill, 3 out of 5, your team would receive 5 serves, and you have to side out 3 out of the 5 times. Now, if you want to make it more difficult, tell the other team that any serving errors they have don't count. So your team has to receive 5 serves, play it out, win the rally against another team, and you need to get 3 out of the 5 to score and rotate. If you get 4 out of the 5, you get 1 bonus point, so you would get 2 points. If you get 5 out of 5 side outs, then you would get 2 bonus points. And so that would be 3 points total. And what you would do is then you would have 3 points in that rotation, you would rotate. But you must get 3 out of 5, or you must side out at 60% minimum to rotate. So I think once a team has played all 6 rotations in serve receive, then the other team can receive 5 balls. And again, if that team's not as strong as your team in practice, maybe they only have to get 2 out of 5, because then that puts pressure on your block and defense and your serving as well. But we'll talk a lot about bonus scoring. We'll talk about, you know, variations and stuff like that. So there's one more variation in this drill, and it's called 3 before 2, which actually is harder than the drill I just mentioned, which was 3 out of 5. The 3 before 2 drill is that your team must get 3 side outs before the serving team can score 2 points. And again, you're playing this out, it's 6-on-6. But so you either have to be at 3-1 or 3-0, which puts you siding out at a very, very high level for a short period of time. So 3 before 2 is another way to work on your side out offense and really put pressure on your rotations. So, and then finally, I think there's a drill that I really like. It's a reverse old school scoring game. And it's whoever wins the rally. Imagine your team is, let's start to score at 10-10. And whoever wins the rally gets to receive. They don't get to serve. So as long as you're receiving serve and winning a rally, you're scoring. And so the idea is that you win the rally, you get a point, and you rotate, and you get to receive again, because this is a side-out game. It's a rotation game. So you start to score at 10-10. And there's two ways to run this drill. Starts the score at 10-10. Each team stays in the same rotation until one team gets to 15. So let's go 10-10 in rotation one. I'm going to receive serve. If I score, I get to 11, I get to receive serve again. If I score again, I get to 12, I get to receive serve again. But keep each team in the same rotation at 10-10 and play to 15 and win by two. Okay, it's going to be hard because you're not going to be able to sight out on a regular basis. So that's one way you can do that. You can play 10-10, play to 15. You can only score when you sight out. You can stay in the same rotation and you can play a 10-10 game to 15, and then you rotate. So you've got that extended side-out work in rotation one, and again, you can only score when you're receiving the serve. And you know, if you lose the rally, you have to serve to the other team, and the only team way they can score is by receiving serve. And so anytime you win a rally, you rotate. So first option, 10-10, win by two, play to 15. The second option is start to score at 5-5, and just play a regular game. But you're playing the regular game by every time that you receive serve and score, you get to rotate and receive serve again. Nobody can score with a serve. And if you do score with your serve, you have to receive in that rotation a win before you can move on. And so this old school scoring, which means you can only, and it's a version of it, the only way you can score is it's reverse old school is what I should say. And the only way you can score is by receiving serve. And the more drills you do in practice that force your side out offense to be as good as possible, and also it allows you to really work in those areas, because ultimately it comes down to, you know, how well you side out. Do you side out at a high level? Puts a lot of pressure on the other team. And I think that's one of the things that's key. So, you know, this old school, reverse old school drill, it's really challenging. Puts a lot of pressure on teams on their side out offense to succeed, because you're having to side out over and over and over again to be successful. So, you know, that's one side of the component of side out offense. And you know, that's when you're receiving the serve. The other side is when your team is serving and you're basically on team defense. And you know, team defense is when you serve to the opponent of the other team, and you're trying to put yourself in the best position to score. And that means that you're serving, you're blocking, and then you're playing defense. And I think that's one of the things that you look at is what are the key things there. And I'm going to go through certain areas, and if you look at these areas, you're going to understand exactly how you need to train your team defense. And you know, when you serve the ball to the opposing team, there's really a checklist of things that you must do on your side of the net to put your team in the best position to win the point each time. The first thing is your serving strategy. Who or where do you serve to give your team the best chance to score? That's one of the things that you're going to have to know as a coach. How many potential attackers are there, and where are they located on the other side of the net? You're going to have to know that as a coach. Your team is going to have to know that. Do all the players on the court know who the attackers are? That's going to be key. Does the opposing team regularly attack out of the back row? And if so, what positions from the back row do they attack from? Those are all things that you know. These are all things that you need to know as you serve the ball or before you serve the ball. Which attacker is most likely to get set? And how do you plan on defending against that attacker? That's one of the things you're going to have to know as well. Do you know the attacking tendencies of all the attackers on the other side of the net? Do you have blocking tactics in place to try to stop those attackers? Is your team at base defense to stop a potential set or dump, quick attack kill, or a ball that might come over on the first contact? These are all the things that you have to do in order to be ready to play team defense when you're serving the ball. This also outlines exactly the things that you need to work on in your practice setting as well. And as I get more into this, we'll all talk about it. So I think another thing is, let's look about how you set your defense up, okay? And I'm gonna go through this. And understanding that, especially in girls and women's volleyball, there's a very strong emphasis on defending the opposing team's attack. And then you counterattack, which we often call scoring in transition. And this just means that your team has successfully defended the opposing team's attack, and then you go on offense to attack back to the other team. And so understanding these scenarios that I'm going to lay out, you know, is going to give you a guideline on how you're going to train your team. Okay, I think that's going to be key. Is there a weak blocker in the front row that the opponent is going to try to attack on your team, which will dictate how your team positions its backcourt defenders? How have we set up off-blocker defense? Is the libero playing left or middle back? What happens if the setter digs the ball, especially if the libero is playing middle back? Once your team digs the ball, can the middle hitter hit behind off one leg if the team has a front row setter? Do you have a strong back row attack option in transition? What kind of tempo will you run your left front and right front attackers on once you dig a ball? I think if you answer these questions, this gives you the roadmap for how you're going to train your team defense and transition attack. And so let's go back. Let's set up training scenarios for your team defense, okay? And we'll talk about these in terms of how we're going to train in chunks. And the first thing I brought up was, is there a weak blocker in your front row that the opponent might try to attack regularly? And generally, every team has a blocker that other teams like to go after. So if that's the case, then one of the things that I'm doing in practice on a regular basis is I'm defending with, you know, my scout team or the other team attacking that blocker more often than not, because there's going to be an extra amount of attention paid to that blocker when we're in match play. So I want to spend part of my training time in that rotation or those rotations where that blocker is attacked regularly. And I may want to be in a situation where if I've got a big hitter who doesn't play back row on my team, one of the things I might want to do is put that hitter on the second team to hit against my first team defense if she's out already, because I want to work on defending when that weak blocker is being attacked. So that's one training concept right there that we tried to address. How do you set up your off-blocker defense? And one of the reasons I ask that is because, and I want to go back first also to the weak blocker, because one of the things that you have to understand is if you do have a short blocker in the front row, and a lot of times it's the setter, how are you going to play defense behind a short blocker? Are you going to move your middle back over if it's a setter on the right side? Are you going to move your middle back over more towards the line? Are you going to drop your line digger right back because a lot of balls are going to be hit down the line? Are you going to have a combination of both? Are you going to drop your line digger back, and are you going to move your middle back over so you've got two diggers in a similar area, and then maybe bring your left front blocker, off blocker underneath the cover tip? I mean, these are all things that you'll have to decide on how you're going to defend, because you know teams will attack a weak blocker. How will you defend against that? And again, this is the scenario that you set up in practice to go over and over and over again so you understand. Another thing is your off blocker. I mean, what are you going to do with your off blocker? Is your off blocker going to take tips underneath the block? Or is your off blocker going to dig cross court and be back on out by the sideline so they can dig in transition? So it's another area that we're going to have to train. If we're going to work on off blocker defense coming underneath the block, then I've got to make sure that my team can cover a tip, my off blocker can play defense and get back into attacking transition on a regular basis. So that's another area that I'm going to have to train based on the tactic that I've set up for my defense. Another thing I look at is my libero. Some people like to play their libero in left back. Some people like to play their libero in middle back. If you play your libero in left back, you know, you've got certain things that you do defensively. If you play your libero in middle back, you've got certain things you do defensively. So that's another area that you'll have to work on, because those are two different demands if the libero's in middle back or the libero's in left back, especially what happens if the setter digs the ball. And if your libero's in middle back and your libero's in the back part of the court, does your libero still come out of middle back and become the second setter, or does somebody else set the ball? A lot of times at the international countries, you'll see the setter will dig the ball up in the middle of the court, and the middles will come off the net and they're set, because, you know, these middles have great hands and they can set the ball left front or right front. So, but what are you going to do if the setter digs the ball? That's another area of training that you've got to focus on, is if you're going to work on transition volleyball and your setter digs the first ball, is your libero coming out of left back to set? Is your libero coming out of middle back to set? Or is somebody else coming to set the ball? That's another situation that happens. And then another thing to think about is, once your team digs the ball, you know, can the middle hitter hit behind off one leg? And a lot of times if you have a front row setter, you know, we talked earlier about spreading offenses, you know, can your middle get behind and can you hit adequately behind the setter off one leg with your middle, and If not, then what are you going to do? And I think one of the things that I saw this last college season was, you know, I watch a lot of Big Ten volleyball, and I watch Minnesota. And Minnesota, you know, they didn't have that big slide hitter, and they didn't have that big back row attacker. So what happened was, you know, in three rotations in the front row, other teams kind of ganged up on them because they knew that, you know, they weren't going to be hitting behind off one leg. They weren't going to be spreading a lot. And also, there wasn't that big right side bomber coming out of the back row, just personnel-wise. So other teams knew that their options were more limited in the three rotations, the setter was in the front row. And I think that's one of the things that you want to think about your team as well, is if your middle doesn't get behind, you know, then you've got two hitters in the front row with a front row setter. You know, do you have back row attack capability? And if you have strong back row attack capability, where do they hit based on after you dig the ball in transition, based on where your blockers go? And then the last thing to look at is I talked about the tempo of your left front and right front attackers. And the reason I go over these again is because this is exactly the different scenarios that you work on to address these areas that you need to be strong in transition when you have transition attack, transition offense. So again, these are all questions that you have to answer. These are all scenarios that you face with your team, but these are also the areas that you train to make your team strong. And I think that's one of the things to understand. So I think that's the key. And again, to go back on that is, if you understand all the things that you have to do on defense, if you understand all the ways that you have to react and respond on defense, you know, blocking and digging, you know, these are all areas that you're going to focus on in your training. And I think that's one of the ways to understand, you know, your areas that you're weakest in are the areas that you address, because you know that other teams will exploit you in those areas. So I think that's going to be one of the keys. So I want to talk just a little bit about developing championship standards through competition and practice. And, you know, we talked about side-out offense. We talked about team defense. And so generally in a game, you're either receiving the serve or you're serving. And, you know, we've tried to lay out, you know, what teams do in both those scenarios. But when you get into practice and you've gone from these areas that you're working on in chunks, you've gone to you're going to go to team play because you want to replicate situations. One of the things that, you know, we always tried to get we always wanted to make practice or competition in practice harder than anybody we would play all year. And, you know, it's one of the things that I remember that we the most about us. I mean, I can't remember in my last 30 years of sports performance, I can't remember in practice playing a single 15-point or 25-point set. I can't remember playing one time. We just didn't do it. We just thought it was a waste of time. And when we competed, we either were working on either a specific area of team play with a scoring standard, which placed, you know, a lot of pressure on the team because we wanted to work on certain areas and we scored those areas, or, you know, we wanted to create the most difficult situations possible that would help us on the road to try to win a national championship. And we always focused on intensity of play rather than volume. And a lot of teams will play a lot in practice, but to me, I wanted to play, you know, we only played once a week. We played on Friday nights. We generally only played for about an hour or less, but we wanted the level of play to be as high and as intense as possible, because we knew we trained a lot, but the key is, it's not how much you train or how much you practice or how much you play. It's the level you're able to play at when the time comes that you have to play at the highest level possible. And so we were trying to always push the envelope in practice on how can we make practice as competitive as possible, either short up down games or really, really intense drills. It took a long time, you know, to get to an end, you know, something like that. But we wanted the intensity to be way more important than the volume of play, because, and I've said this in past podcasts, American kids play way too much volleyball, and most of it's played at max intensity levels. You know, they're either playing in a match they have no chance to win, or they're playing in a match they have no chance to lose, and they're playing too much. And I'm going to get into that next time on the next podcast. But I think one of the things that here's six drills that I like. I think you're going to find them challenging. I think they're going to benefit your team. So I'm going to give you six drills. The first drill that we call 7-point free ball. And 7-point free ball is a simple drill because it's just literally free balls put in from a coach. And one of the things that you'll do with your team is, you know, you'll go to rotation one, and, you know, the other side of the net will give you a free ball. You'll play it out. The loser will get the next free ball. And so what that means is scores will always be close. Whoever loses a rally gets the next ball. So in this, you play by seven. You have to win by two. So let's say it's 6-6 and you score a point. You can't win 7-6. You have to win by two. So you have to get to 8-6. So oftentimes, this 7-point free ball drill will go way past seven. And also, you play it by rotation. So, and one of the things that there's a lot of balls. The rallies are long, especially if teams are competitive. So one of the things that you do is you'll play to seven, win by two. And then if you start in rotation one, you'll flip to rotation four. Because what you want middles changing every time because the middles get run to death otherwise. So the rotation order for this is one to rotation four, back to rotation two, to rotation three, to rotation six, to rotation five. So one, four, two, three, six, five. Now, we were in Japan. I think I've told you about this on other podcasts, but we were in Japan a long time ago, about 11 years ago, and we were there with the Seitoko High School, which was the national champion high school team of Japan, and we played this drill every day for about 4 hours. This is the only drill we ran the entire time we were in Japan. We didn't receive one single serve the entire time we were there, but the transition and the level of intensity in this drill was brutal. And we ran it a little bit differently. We would play our starters in rotation one to seven, and we would rest, and we would go again in rotation one. We would play three sets in rotation one, and then our subs would go on and play another two sets. But, you know, it took us 2.5 hours to play six rotations. But one of the things that I think probably is best for you if you're listening to this is play a 7-point game in rotation one, win by two, loser next ball, and then go to rotation four. And go through all six rotations. And again, if you have time, you can go through again. But this 7-point free ball drill puts a lot of emphasis on rallying and transition volleyball. So I love this drill a lot. It creates a high level of intensity, and I think it'll do your team a lot of good. The next drill is a combination. It's a three-ball wash drill, and we have two different three-ball wash drills that we run. We run a 1+2 drill. The 1+2 drill is you receive the serve plus you get two free balls. And so you have to, the receiving team has to win all three balls to score and rotate. The defensive team has to win two out of the three balls to score and rotate. If the defensive team only wins one out of the three, it's a wash. If the defensive team were to win all three, then they get 2 points and they get to rotate. So, you know, we run this drill 1+2. The receiving team will play for six rotations, and the serving team will play for six rotations. And then you'll flip, and the team that received for six rotations will serve and play against the other team for six rotations. So that's 1+2. The next wash drill is 1+2. So the receiving team receives a serve, and the other team gets two free balls. So in this scenario, somebody's going to score every time, because if you get two out of the three, you're going to score and rotate. If somebody were to win all three, they would get a bonus point, so they would get two. So, but what you've got is you've got, in both of these drills, you've got two free balls coming, either to the receiving team or to the serving team, but you're playing three balls out. So there's a flurry of rallies, there's a higher level of intensity, there's a lot more volleyball played in a shorter period of time, and then you move on. So these are three-ball wash drills, 1+2, which means the receiving team gets a serve plus two free balls. And then there's 1+2, which means the serving team gets the two free balls after the serving team receives serve. So that's a couple of drills I think that will be very beneficial for you as well. The next drill is what we call a scramble drill. And scramble drill is, you know, you're across the net, across the court from your libero. If your libero's in left back, then you're across the court facing your libero, and you throw or bounce or hit a ball at your libero where the libero has to pursue a ball to keep the ball in play. The drill doesn't start until the libero plays the ball up. And I'm going to stress that you don't hit a ball at your libero, that you make your libero pursue and chase a ball down. Once the ball has been dug, then the scramble starts. And the scramble means that you're just having to transition out of a scramble situation and you play the ball out. The loser of the rally gets the next ball. In the scramble drill, you're playing to three. Whoever gets to three scores a point, and then you just can free sub players in and out. But by all the drills where a loser gets the next ball, you're keeping the drills close. So again, you're only playing to three, and so it's going to go by fast. And the idea of these drills is there's a lot of intensity for a short period of time, and then you get new players or you change positions. But again, scramble drill starts once the libero has kept the ball in play. And you want to make it as difficult as possible because, again, in the practice setting, the harder it is to keep the ball in play, the greater chance you have to keep a ball in play later on in competition when it really counts. So, again, scramble drill to three equals one, loser next ball. Number four is the setter gets the first ball. So now you're on the other side of the net. You're by the left front position. Hit a ball at your setter. Your setter digs the ball. That starts the rally. And now we're going to play out of system with the setter contacting the first ball. And again, same thing. We're going to play whoever gets to three equals a point, and the loser gets the next ball. So that's setter first ball drill. And then the fifth drill is a first ball kill drill with your left front or right front. And, you know, the ball gets put into play by a coach, either a free ball or a down ball. If it's a left front first ball kill drill, the other team knows that your left front has to hit the first ball. So the blockers are set up already. The defense already knows. You can make it harder by telling your left front they can't tip. They've got to swing to get a first ball kill. And then both sides are running this same drill. So if you don't get a first ball kill, you're just playing to try to win the rally. If you win the rally, then you get another shot at a first ball kill. And once the hitter, the left side or the right side, because you can do this on both pins, once the left front takes a swing, if they get a first ball kill, they get one. Another ball comes, they get another one. So potentially a great left front hitter could hit five balls in a row, five first ball kills. That scores 1 point. They're out. Somebody comes in. The other team switches out as well. So you just have one team against the other. It's either the left side trying to get a first ball kill or it's the right side. It can't be both at the same time. But if the first ball isn't killed to score a small point, then anybody can get set in a rally. Because in the rally, you're just playing to get the ball back. You're just playing to win the rally so you get another chance to swing for first ball kill. But for this drill, for your left sides and right sides, this idea that they've got to get five first ball kills against a defense that knows they're going to be swinging, it's very difficult. So, you know, to get five first ball kills, you may have a hitter take 15, 20, 30 swings, or you may have a hitter take five. I don't think I've ever seen it happen, but you may have a hitter take five because the other team, they're trap blocking. They know you're going to defend, especially if you tell the attackers they cannot tip, because now you're making them take big swings at the ball. They either have to hit off the block for a kill, they have to hit down, or they have to hit the ball so hard that a defender shanks it out of bounds. But first ball kill, five first ball kills equal 1 point, and then sub in and out. So, and then the last drill is an old school scoring drill. And this is number six. And start at 10-10 and just play to 15, win by 2 points, but you can only score with your serve. And so the rest of the time, you're just rotating. And this puts a lot of stress on your side out because you have to side out and get the ball back to serve. So your side out offense has to be very, very effective because you can only score when you're serving. So start at 10, play to 15, win by two, but only score with your serve. And, you know, if you've side out, you get to rotate and serve, but you can only score with that serve. And so this 10-10 game to five, win by two, will take a long time generally because, again, you've got to be able to be effective in side out, but again, you can only score with serve. So all those side out rotations when you rotate don't get you any points. So I think this drill it'll make people appreciate the stamina that volleyball players used to have a long time ago when matches might go 3 hours and a hitter might hit 100 balls in a single match because there was so much side out volleyball. But I think, you know, the 10-10 to 15 win by two, only score with your serve, even though there's an emphasis on the serving team scoring points, there's really a lot of training for your side out offense, because you're going to have to continue to side out to try to get the ball back to serve so you can win. So I think those six drills, that they're very beneficial. They incorporate a lot of the things that we've talked about in this podcast. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And next time I'm going to tell you why it's 2006 all over again. Thank you. Have a great day.